Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron, and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus, and you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to this edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I'll be talking about Jason Blum gets a Funko, but X-Director doesn't. I'll go into more detail on why X-Directors should be getting Funkos instead of Jason Blum. I will have David McDonough on my show to talk about his film Groundhog, which is currently out through Boombastic Films. And I will explain why my great state of Rhode Island needs a yearly horror convention than the one that we have right now, as XCon doesn't seem to want to run yearly horror conventions. And if you live in Rhode Island, you know what horror convention I'm talking about that runs in Rhode Island, but decides to run whenever it feels like it. I'll be going more into that. But first, the news, and this is a really crazy one, as all things have gotten literally out of control. I had a news segment already planned, recorded a couple of news segments, but I have to throw it out. It literally has to go in the trash. I'll post more news segments on my YouTube channel, because I don't want to waste these news segments. But the major focus of this news segment is a major news story dropped and a major rumor is going around. They were both reported by BloodyDisgusting.com. Let me first start off with the major news story, since this is confirmed. It really feels like come October 2020, it's going to be Saw 9 versus Halloween 2 and 3. Yes, I'll go into more of that later on. But let me start off with Saw 9. When I first heard about this news, my jaw literally dropped. I'm thinking to myself, this can't be happening, right? It sounded like a pipe dream, but the headlining cast for the upcoming Saw 9 has been announced, and it's going to star Chris Rock, who we already know is also executive producing the film, and it's going to star, wait for it, Samuel L. Jackson. Yes, Samuel L. Jackson is going to star in the next Saw film, as Bloody Disgusting confirmed a rumor that was going around between episodes that Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson will star in the new Saw film. Chris Rock will be playing a police detective on the hunt, trying to find out who's behind a series of grisly and gruesome murders, while Samuel L. Jackson's role in the film will be playing Chris Rock's father. This has me excited. This is major for the Saw franchise, which after the last film, Jigsaw, quite frankly, felt like it was dead. Literally dead. That film felt like a paint-by-the-numbers film. It felt more like a procedural crime thriller than an actual Saw film. That's the take I got from Jigsaw, but this news breathes new life into the series, as I'm very interested in really seeing this next Saw film, as now I'm very excited for it. The fact that they got Samuel L. Jackson to star in the next Saw film is a major news story. It has now officially, in my mind, brought Saw 9 to the level that it's now one of my most anticipated films of 2020. Because I'm a big fan of Samuel L. Jackson. He's been in tons of films. He's had over 180 film credits. And he continues to work in major films. This year alone, he was in M. Night Shyamalan's Glass, which is a very good film. He was in Avengers Endgame, briefly. And he was in the most recent box office hit, Spider-Man Far From Home. So, this is major news, folks. And it really breathes new life into the Saw franchise. I'm so excited to see Saw 9. If I wasn't anyway, because Darren Lynn Brosman is directing as well. So, this may be the biggest news story to drop. If it wasn't for the next piece of news that I'm going to talk about, which also came from BloodyDisgusting.com. But I want to let everyone know that this is a rumor and only a rumor, so this might not happen. So, but this is so big and mind-boggling that it has to be talked about on the show. It is the fact that there is a rumor going around that David Gordon Green will be returning to direct not only Halloween 2, but Halloween 3. And here's the thing. Rumor has it, too, that Halloween 2 and Halloween 3 will be released in the same month, October 2020. It's like, what the hell is going on here? Seriously. It's like, if you want to put a horror film on the schedule, you might as well just avoid October 2020. Seriously. Because you have the new Saw film that's scheduled to be released in October 2020. Now you have a rumor going around that Halloween 2 and Halloween 3 will be released in October 2020. Now, here is my thoughts on releasing Halloween 2 and Halloween 3 at the same time. If this rumor is true, it could not be true. It could be debunked, for all I know. But that is insane. Seriously. I don't know why you would release two films of a franchise in the same month. I just don't get that. This is insane. Borderline pure insanity. Personally, I think it's not a good move because it's never been done before where two films of the same franchise was released in the same month. I've heard of franchises releasing one film every year. That happened with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where you got a film every year for 3 years. But this is just insane. I don't know if it's going to work, seriously. It could be budgeted so low that it's worth the risk, but that is just insane, if true. Because remember, it's a rumor. But it was posted on BloodyDisgusting.com, which is a major horror news website. So this is an unconfirmed rumor. Don't take any stock in it unless it's already been confirmed. If it's already been confirmed, then it's confirmed. But as of recording, I'm taking this as a rumor. So we could be completely fooled, and this can just be totally false. Some of it could probably be true, that David Gordon Green could be coming back to the director's chair, that part. But I really find it hard to believe that they would schedule Halloween 2 and Halloween 3 in the same month. This would be extraordinary if this rumor is true. Not in the horror genre, but in films in general. I swear, October 2020 is going to be crazy. If I was a horror filmmaker or producer, I probably right now, I don't want to schedule a horror film in October. Because Saw 9 is going to come out, Halloween 2 is going to come out, and maybe Halloween 3 is going to come out. And that's just pure insanity. As Halloween 2020 is going to be a very interesting time. As both the Saw and Halloween franchises are stepping up the game. It's just going to be pure insanity next Halloween. Not to take away what's coming out this Halloween. But this is just mind-blowing. The fact that we could have possibly three major horror films in October. With that, that's the news. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Warning! The following commentary doesn't represent the views of Doc Discussions or the Doc Discussions Network. In other words, there are my views only. Welcome back. Now, last episode, I mentioned a new story about Jason Blum gets a Funko. Yes, Jason Blum gets a Funko. While X-Director doesn't. I was not too happy about this news. Because personally for me, while I respect what Jason Blum has done for the whole horror genre and everything, I think it's way too early to get a Funko made of him. Seriously. And I'm a big Funko collector. As I have a lot of Funkos from Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Hellraiser, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and more. So, when I heard the news that Jason Blum is getting a Funko, as a Funko collector, I was not too happy about this. Because he hasn't been in the horror genre for an extended period of time. When I think of extended period of time, I think 20, 30, 40 years. And Jason Blum hasn't been around the horror genre for that extended period of time. I really thought Funko is really going to stop focusing on the classic horror directors after they released the Alfred Hitchcock Funko. And instead, Jason Blum gets a Funko. Yes, Jason Blum gets a Funko. But there are three directors, sci-fi and horror genre related, that deserves a Funko way more than Jason Blum. I'm sorry. And I won't even go into my obsession for a Lloyd Kaufman Funko, or a Toxie Funko, or a David Lynch Funko, but instead focus on three sci-fi and horror directors that truly deserve a Funko. And the first one that truly deserves a Funko over Jason Blum is John Carpenter. John Carpenter has done many classic horror films such as Halloween, The Thing, Escape from New York, Starman. This guy's done a number of notable films. And it really kind of angers me that he has not gotten a Funko yet. That guy deserves a Funko. I'm sorry. He has created two of the greatest icons in sci-fi horror action. Michael Myers and Snake Plissken. John Carpenter is a legend. He is well deserving of having a Funko like Alfred Hitchcock. And it angers me to see him get passed over so that Jason Blum gets a Funko. Now, the second director that really deserves a Funko over Jason Blum is the godfather of the zombie movie, in my opinion, George A. Romero. Now, there's nothing you can say. This guy has created a landmark zombie trilogy. He's created Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead. And besides that, he's done some also notable films like Creepshow and The Crazies. Why hasn't this guy gotten a Funko yet? This guy is a legend. If it wasn't for his zombie trilogy of films, you would not have a Walking Dead. You would not have a 28 Days Later. You would not have countless numbers of zombie films if it wasn't for George A. Romero. But it really angers me that George A. Romero doesn't get a Funko, but Jason Blum gets a Funko. And the last one is just plain criminal here, that this guy has not gotten a Funko for all the achievements that this guy has done, but Jason Blum gets a Funko. And let me remind you that this guy is a legend in the sci-fi and horror genre. And why hasn't he gotten a Funko yet? I'm talking about Steven Spielberg. Yes, the same Steven Spielberg that has directed films such as Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Jaws, Jurassic Park, E.T., and countless other films. It really blows my mind why this guy has not gotten the Funko treatment yet. Especially when they just released the Jaws Funko set. I'm surprised they didn't add on a Steven Spielberg Funko, because that would have been kind of cool to have a Steven Spielberg Funko in that set. Or separately, it would have been the perfect time to release a Steven Spielberg Funko, because this guy is probably the king of the blockbusters. He's done so many blockbuster films that it's hard to count, seriously. And yet, this guy does not have a Funko. I don't get it. Steven Spielberg, he's a great director. He's done films that will live on for the end of time. Because this guy is a legend. This guy is well deserving of a Funko. If you're going to give a legend like Alfred Hitchcock a Funko, why isn't Steven Spielberg getting a Funko? I don't get it. There's like many people that are well deserving of a Funko, like Steven Spielberg. I'll even throw James Cameron in there. He's done Terminator and Aliens. Those two guys should have Funkos. Seriously. And they don't have Funkos, but you guessed it, Jason Blum gets a Funko. And I really don't know what the people at Funko are thinking here, because they are not paying homage to these legends. They are paying homage to the hottest thing in Hollywood. You have a J.J. Abrams Funko out there. You had a James Wan Funko at one time as a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive. Hell, the creators of Stranger Things have their own Funkos, and the legends don't. But it really irks me that the legends of horror and science fiction don't have Funkos, but people like Jason Blum and whoever is the hottest trend gets a Funko. I just don't get it. Really, Funko. I don't know what you guys are doing, but you guys are missing out on really capitalizing on these legends, because us fans of horror and sci-fi and geekdom would love to have a John Carpenter Funko, would love to have a George A. Romero Funko, would love to have a Steven Spielberg Funko, would love to have a James Cameron Funko. But they don't have Funkos, but Jason Blum gets a Funko. I'm sorry, that does not sit well with me. I'll probably still purchase it. I'm such a horror fan, but it just really irks me that Funko is really going after these directors and producers in the now and not paying homage to the legends of sci-fi and horror. It is just wrong. Funko really needs to step up their game and stop putting out Funkos like Steven Spielberg, like John Carpenter, like George A. Romero. Because we Funko lovers would buy it. I just don't get why Jason Blum gets to cut to the front of the line and get his Funko, because he's not even a director, he's a producer. And he gets a Funko, and these legendary directors don't. It just angers me. I'm sorry. I'm done with this segment. Because Funko really needs to pay attention to the history of cinema and the history of the horror and sci-fi genre, instead of paying attention to who's the hottest thing in the moment. That is the main reason why I don't like the fact that Jason Blum gets a Funko. Have a podcast that you want to promote? Well, if you're interested in swapping commercials, you can promote your show here on Anthony T's Horror Show. And in return, I will promote your commercial on my show as well. For more information, contact me at AnthonyT'sHorrorShow@gmail.com.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I am the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well, then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm here with Dave McDonough, director of the film Groundhog.
Hey.
Which is one of the recent films released by Boombastic Films. Mm-hmm. How are you doing today, David?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. First question, what made you want to get into the filmmaking business?
I think very early on, I remember when I was probably about 2 years old, I saw Dawn of the Dead for the first time, the original. And ever since then, seeing that, just being like mystified by it, I knew I wanted to do that even way back then. And my course has never changed. I've always wanted to be a horror director.
What aspects of the film that you liked so much that you wanted to pursue it?
The music, the blood, the gore, Tom Savini's gore, just the different colors of the zombies. Like, they're kind of like a blue tint, gray, well, gray, more grayish than Day of the Dead, but kind of like blue in that one. It was just like so many like colors flying at me, like the color of the blood, just crazy gore effects and stuff. I don't know. I've just been hooked ever since.
Now, how did you become involved with Boombastic Films with Matthew Fisher and Alexander Hawk?
For years, I was kind of like trying to do it on my own, and I really couldn't find a team that was as passionate for movies that I was. It was people who would like kind of like just, you know, just do it to do it, and then they wouldn't even care about it. But around 2014, Matt Fisher, he gave me the opportunity to be an associate producer on his short film Insomniac, and I jumped at the chance. And he said you could either just be a associate producer and take the credit, or you can come learn the ropes and stuff, like work on set and whatnot, just wear many different hats. And like, I took that opportunity because this is what I always wanted to do. So around 2014, they took me in.
Now, what was the experience like working on Insomniac?
It was fun. That was the first I did with them. So it was very, I was just very excited, and I tried to like spread positivity through the set and stuff. I was like wide eyed and bushy tailed. And, Did a lot of production assistant stuff. I was an extra, just on set as much as possible. I helped out with some special effects, like blood pouring and whatnot. And, it was just fun. It was just super fun.
Your latest film is Groundhog, which is available on DVD through Boombastic Films. Tell everyone about the film.
This film is my It's like my love letter to 1980s slasher movies, holiday-themed ones, because it takes place during Groundhog Day. It's about a man who loses everything during a long winter, when the groundhog predicts it's going to be like a longer winter. And just his whole world just gets shattered. And 5 years later, he's working at a new job, and his, like, everything just starts crumbling around him, so he just kind of snaps. And he goes after what he thinks is responsible for everything is the groundhog, even though that's, like, unreasonable to think, but that's what he just goes on, like, a kind of like a road trip to get it and kill it.
What made you come up with the film's story?
Well, you know Monster Squad, how they're watching Groundhog Day Part 12? For years, I always wanted to see that. I always wanted to see a Groundhog Day-based slasher movie, because I love holiday slasher movies, and nobody ever made one. So I was like, I'm going to make one. And also, the concept for the beginning of the movie, it was like, I heard a story about a guy who would snowplow, and he was plowing this one driveway, and this guy was walking his dog, and, circumstances and stuff, and the guy pretty much plowed the guy's dog. And the guy took the leash out, and it was just a leash. And, just thought about how devastating that would be. Especially if it happened, like, to a person. Like how life-changing would that be, you know? So I just combined those two together, and I wrote the script and stuff.
Now, what was the script writing process like?
It was
writing the film.
It was from, I'd say probably 2012 until 2015, a few months before, production. And, just kind of piece by piece, I would bounce it off other writers that I'm friends with, other, filmmakers and stuff to see what they thought about it. And, pretty much that whole time it was evolving. The script was evolving, getting longer and longer, and, adding parts to it. Like, the last part I added was, there's a detective character and a doctor character. That was, like, one of the last parts I added. Kind of like an homage to, like, Halloween. A lot of homages in it, too, to many different slasher movies.
Yeah, it seems like there's, like, a Halloween homage in your film and in Matt Fisher's film as well.
Yeah, we love John Carpenter.
Hey, he's the best. One of the best. <I know. laughs> I'm still waiting for that Funko of his.
Yeah.
Which I went into earlier in my show. The film has a really good look for the small budget that you had to deal with.
Thank you.
What was the budget for the film?
$7,000.
Was it tough making some of the special effects work with that budget?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes and no. There's a lot of effects that didn't go into it. That we wanted to do, but it kind of seemed like it kind of over our heads a little bit. Like, there's a couple kill scenes that we had to, like, change and alter. Definitely alter from the script. It was, like, decapitations and stuff. So pretty much you just scale it down to whatever you can afford, you know. But for the most part, you know, we had a lot of fun. Like, everybody threw their hat in the ring to, like, blow blood and do makeup and stuff. We had Billy Coyne. We had Danielle Schneider doing, like, the makeup effects and stuff. And me and Matt, like, we learned from watching horror movies, so, you know, we're blowing blood and doing some of the kill effects and stuff, so. So you just scale it. You scale it down to whatever budget to make it, like, good.
Now, what was it like setting up and filming some of the film's most glorious sequences?
Well, the goriest one, you know, it's probably the shovel one, right? That was a night. Yeah, that was quite a night. Everybody just gets in the zone. Like, Sam will tell you, Sam Hayes will tell you, he, actually thought he was cutting Alex in half. Like, he just kept getting so in the zone and stuff. And I actually, for that scene, even though we did the special effects, me and Matt, even though we did the special effects, oh, and, Danielle Schneider was with us that night too. We did the special effects, but I still kind of, like, I was in the zone so much, I started gagging. Like, I've never done that to harm. The only movie I've ever done that to is Antichrist. And I started gagging when the guts were all spilling all over the place.
Yeah, that film is a tough film to watch.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was the casting process like? As one of the things I liked about this film was the lead performances by Sam Hayes, Alexandra Coppola, and Lilith Adastroff.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like casting them in the film?
It was, for Sam, It was originally, it was going to be a friend of mine who's pretty much like a big, like huge guy, like kind of like a Tyler Mayne type guy. And he had to drop out last minute. So I kind of like said, we're like thinking about who could do it. Cause it was very like, it was under the wire. And we had, Sam was going to be being a grip and stuff and doing lighting and whatnot. So I said, maybe we can have, instead of a brute, we can have like a wiry psychopath. And I think just Sam just was a perfect fit for it. Alexandra Coppola, we had help from someone we used to work with, and he hooked us up with them, Lilith and Alexandra. But yeah, they're sweethearts, so and I think they fit perfectly. They did a great job.
Yeah, I really think they really helped this film be as good as it is, besides your direction, of course.
Thank you. Yeah, I was just like, I just watched it, and I'm just looking at Alexandra's performance, and like, she put her all into that. She like gave it the same respect as I'd say Joe Spinell would do when he would say he'd go from The Godfather to like Maniac, and he would treat them both like they were like A-plus films. And she did that with this one, so she kind of elevated the slasher, like B-movie slasher status a little bit higher, like just by giving it her all, you know? And Lilith is just awesome. She's just a badass, you know?
Now, the film also features a cameo from James Balsamo.
Balsamo, yep.
Balsamo. I always get that wrong. I always get it wrong.
He doesn't mind, I don't think.
The director of such films as I Spell Your Guts, Bite School, and The Lich.
Yep.
How did he come about?
Well, he actually... He did...
In this film.
Sorry about that. He did... He actually did a voice cameo in Insomniac. He was a bill collector on the phone at the beginning. So, and you know, he's always at Rock and Shock and stuff, so you always see him at his booth and whatnot. Like I just friended him on Facebook, and Matt worked with him before. Matt was good, you know, getting to be good friends with him and stuff. And I just hit him up on Facebook one day, like way before production, and I just thought he would be a perfect fit for Travis. So I was just like, "You want to do this part? You know, we're gonna have these gore effects and whatnot." And he's like, "Yeah. You asked me like way ahead of time, you know, so give me some good time." And then he like took a ferry from Long Island, and he was there in a snowstorm. So, and he was doing some great promotion for it. He did a video on the boat. We got an interview that's on YouTube with him and stuff. He's just a promotion machine, you know? And he was just a joy to have on set. He was just always joking and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like he's this generation's Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, I think so.
Because he has that personality that can sell films.
Absolutely, yeah. Did you see his book is in Barnes & Noble now, the book he just put out?
I've heard about it, but I haven't had a chance to get it yet. What is he like to work with on set?
He is a force of nature. He's always on, just like a constant professional too, at the same time as being like a jokester. And he gives you way more than you need for like footage and stuff. And I just wanted to like set him loose, you know? And Matt kind of wanted to set him loose to see like how far he could go with it, and it was just a blast. There was a snowstorm raging outside at the same time. It was hard to drive, but he was just making it a total blast the whole time. Absolute professional.
Yeah, he is definitely a very nice person. Mm-hmm. I met him a couple times at a couple conventions.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys that people should definitely support.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's like, I think no matter how far he gets into it, he's always going to be that awesome dude, you know, that nice dude. And that's good, too, because some people can, like, get full of themselves and kind of write off the little guy and stuff. But I don't think he would ever do that.
Now, how long did this film take to shoot?
We shot starting the second week in January 2016, and it took till the end of January of 2016. So we shot every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And, about 8 days altogether of filming and stuff.
I was listening on to the commentary track that you had challenges with the weather. What was it like facing those challenges?
Well, I wrote the snowstorm part of it, inspired by what New England, winters is like, really bad snow, just terrible, like, devastating snow, and then when we went to shoot it, we had the most snow, like, almost snow-free winter ever. it was like two snowstorms that whole winter, and I was just like, well, come on, snow, you know?
Yeah, usually if you're in the New England area, it can get very snowy in the winter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But sometimes it just rain, which is, for me, a good thing because I hate shoveling snow.
Oh, yeah, me too, yeah. So I guess it was good for that, but I wish we had a little bit more production value with the regular snow. There is a couple scenes.
What would you say was your biggest challenge making this film?
Well, I'd say it was the biggest challenge. I think it was kind of smooth, actually. It was, there was a few communication problems. I'd say that would be about it. But once you get everybody on the same page, it's fine. I don't really know. I had a pretty long, post-production. The editing was a little bit rough because I was still getting used to the program. But, altogether, it was pretty smooth for, I couldn't ask for exhaustion, I'll say. Yeah, the exhaustion of it. Because there was a few times where I thought I was losing my mind. Because I was so tired and cold, and especially the day that I'm acting, in that scene I was completely out of it. I had, like, my mind was gone because I was just so exhausted. So I'd say exhaustion of a first-time filmmaker.
What was the most difficult scene that you filmed on Groundhog?
I'd say definitely stuff with in the beginning with the car, when they're in the car and stuff.
Now, most of the film's exteriors was shot at night.
Mm-hmm.
Was it difficult filming at night compared to filming in the daytime?
Not so much. We had a great lighting crew. I couldn't ask for a better lighting crew, you know? They lit everything up and they lit it up perfectly, you know?
What was your favorite scene to shoot?
My favorite scene to shoot? It's a lot of different levels. I know the festival scene was really fun. The scene where we were cutting Alex in half was really fun. The bottle part, when they have the broken bottles and stuff, that was really fun. Yeah, maybe the balsamo day. The balsamo day was the most fun, yeah.
Besides writing and directing, you also edited the film and did the score for the film.
Yep.
What drew you to also become a composer?
Definitely. Well, I've been a metal musician for years, for probably about 20 years. Once I got out of that, I just wanted to still make music, but not be in the whole band format, because it's hard to get 4 or 5 people on the same page, band-wise. And I love John Carpenter, and I love Goblin, so I wanted to be like a mixture of John Carpenter and Goblin, I guess, kind of like a solo thing.
Now, what was the process like creating the film score?
It was lots of research. Yeah, the whole thing was like a lot of research, like watching horror movies, listening to their soundtracks and stuff, just going by emotion of the scene, like trying to portray what everybody in the scene is doing, you know.
Was this your first time composing a film score?
I believe so. Was it? Did I? I think we did like a couple of short films where I did a little bit of music, but yeah, this is my first total film score, yeah.
What was the editing process like for Groundhog?
That was like a year of me sitting in this room that I'm in right now, just chugging energy drinks and coffee drinks, sitting in the seat, yeah.
What were some of the struggles that you faced during the editing process?
I had a lot of problem with some sound. Hold on, excuse me. A lot of problem with sound and the new program and stuff. I was using Adobe Premiere Pro, just like kind of learning the ropes as I went with that. So a lot of that. I know a lot more now about the program that I did then, so I wish I could kind of go back in time, you know.
Between the acting, directing, editing, writing, and scoring the film, which was the easiest and which was the hardest for you?
The acting is probably the easiest, because I've been doing that since junior high, so I used to be a stage actor, so that was probably the easiest, yeah. Directing while acting, while spitting up like a mouthful of blood, that was fun. But so I'd say the acting was the easiest, yeah.
What was the hardest to deal with?
I'd say the editing, yeah. The directing was fun, but yeah, the editing was the hardest.
If there If there was anything in the film that you wish you could change, what would it be?
A lot more elaborate scenes like they were in the script. A lot more of the, I like how the kills came out. I like how we scaled them down. They're pretty cool. Maybe a decapitation. I don't know.
Now, besides filmmaking and everything, you also have a YouTube channel as well.
Yep.
Tell everyone about that.
My YouTube channel is Dave Maggot. Dave Maggot's pretty much, it was my, my band music stage name since I was a teenager. And so I just named my, channel that. I review horror movies. I do horror movie unboxings, collection updates, collection overviews, collaboration skits, with my friends on there and stuff. Did the 31 days of Halloween, like a review every day. A whole bunch of stuff on there. Live streams.
Finally, I heard a little bit on the commentary track that there might be a sequel to Groundhog.
Mm-hmm.
Is this true or is this just a one and done film?
I want to do a sequel. I definitely want to. I have like two versions of a script floating around, and it's just about choosing like the aspects of which one to use, which one to go with and stuff, you know.
Now, what other films that are on the horizon for you?
We're doing Matthew Fisher's The Wicked Hollows, I think in the fall. I have actually, one of my zombie shorts is coming out on a Tony Newton, DVD anthology, the anthology is called 1000 Zombies. And, a short I did a couple years ago is on there, a zombie short. What else are we doing? Probably a bunch more shorts and whatnot, bombastic and stuff. Yeah.
Are there any plans for any of these shorts to hit the film festival circuit?
I know Insomniac is doing really good. Insomniac is like a festival, sweetheart. I don't know if any of the other ones are going around, but, I'd have to ask Tony Newton. Yeah.
Now, where can they find you on social media?
On Twitter, I think David McDonough 34, or Dave Maggot 34. On Instagram, I am Mr. Maggot 37. On, YouTube, I'm Dave Maggot. On Facebook, I'm David Maggot McDonough. Yeah, where else am I? I'm on Snapchat, but I don't want to give that out.
I don't use Snapchat, so I would have no idea how to use Snapchat. How can they purchase Groundhog?
For Groundhog, you can either hit, me or Matthew Fisher up on social media. We do it in person or through PayPal. Yeah, just hit me up at themetalofmaggot@aol.com or hit up Matt. I think it's lb24000 or 2400 on aol.com. Yeah.
And can they also hit Boombastic Films on Facebook as well?
Yeah, find it, Boombastic Films on Facebook and just shoot us a message and stuff, and either me or Matt will see it, or Alex, you know.
Well, I want to thank you, David McDonough, for coming on to the show. Good luck with the success of your film.
Thanks.
And have a good day.
Thanks so much, Anthony. Have a good one.
You're welcome.
Want to learn more about horror directors? With a lighthearted look at three of their movies? Meet fearless podcaster Gore Blimey.
I've been unsettled by bats in the past and startled by parrots, and I've even been known to jump at the odd cockatoo.
Discover horror films that are classics, and others, too.
There's a topless aerobics massacre, an exploding rock singer, cannibals, nude martial arts, a deep-fried prostitute.
But it's not all silliness. You'll get proper movie breakdowns, opinion, and background information, too.
Yep, in the 80s and 90s, Jeff Stryker was huge in gay porn. In every sense.
So if you're a horror film fan, come and check out the Trilogy of Terror podcast at strangeanddeadly.com or find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or on your podcatcher.
One of those people that has a certain charisma and a certain style, and I'm just hoping one day he'll rub off on me.
The Trilogy of Terror podcast, where we try three times harder to give you the willies.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I want to thank David McDonough for coming on to the show. Definitely pick up his film Groundhog. You can message Boombastic Films on their official Facebook page on how you can order it. definitely order it. I had a very fun time watching this film, and I guarantee you will have a fun time watching this film too. Now, with convention season going into high gear after ScareCon New England, I'm looking forward to the next convention that yours truly will be attending as an attendee. As the rest of the conventions on my schedule this year, I'm going as an attendee, not having a table or anything, so I'm sorry, but I'm going to try to promote the show while I'm at the conventions that I'm going to be at. Now, the first convention that I will be at will be Scares That Cares over in Williamsburg, Virginia. That's right, yours truly will be traveling all the way to Virginia for a convention. I can't wait to get down there, as this convention has a good lineup, including the Thing reunion, the Monster Squad reunion. It also has Sid Haig and Joe Bob Briggs, which I cannot wait to meet. And I also can't wait to attend his show on August 2nd there in Williamsburg, Virginia. So it's going to be a fun weekend down in Williamsburg, Virginia. I can't wait to meet some new people down there and while promoting this podcast as well. So I'll probably be around wearing the Anthony T. Horror Show shirts so I can promote my show. I may have promotional cards located somewhere, but it's not 100% confirmed yet, so I don't want to make any promises. And you can probably expect a Scares That Cares preview show in the near future, like this month here on Anthony T's Horror Show. Then the next convention that yours truly will be attending will be in September 14th, as I'll possibly be at CT Horror Fest. They have a good lineup this year, including Tobin Bell, Shawnee Smith, Sheen Patrick Flannery, Doug Bradley, Quinn Lord, Danielle Harris, and more. So I may be there on September 14th. And of course, I'll be wearing my podcast shirt, so you know who I am. Then on October 11th through the 13th, yours truly will definitely be at Worcester, Massachusetts for Rock and Shock 2019. Bruce Campbell is the only scheduled guest at the moment, but I would expect soon for more guests to trickle in for that convention, as usually around July they start announcing guests for Rock and Shock. So I can't wait for this convention, as I got a feeling this could be better than last year. And finally, my convention schedule ends November 1st to the 3rd, as yours truly will be at Rhode Island Comic Con. Horror-related guests include Matthew Modine from Stranger Things, Matt Ryan from Constantine, the TV series, and Steven Yeun and Michael Cudlitz of The Walking Dead. Rhode Island Comic Con usually has a lot of Walking Dead people, so expect more people from the show to be at the convention. As last year, I got to meet Sarah Wayne Callis, who played Rick Grimes' wife on the show. Very nice person. But I can't wait to see who they bring in Walking Dead related this time around. Which leads me to my open letter. And recently, here in the great state of Rhode Island, we haven't had a horror convention. I know we have Rhode Island Comic Con. I know we have an H.P. Lovecraft convention. But we don't have a yearly regular horror convention. Yes, we do have a horror convention here in Rhode Island, but X Convention, which I won't name, doesn't run every year. But if you're in the area, you know what convention I'm talking about. So I had to write this open letter because my state, Rhode Island, needs a yearly horror convention. Not a horror convention that operates whenever it feels like. It needs a yearly horror convention. So yours truly has decided to write an open letter to anyone that wants to run a horror convention and put it in the great state of Rhode Island. Dear anyone who is interested in running a horror convention in Rhode Island, Rhode Island is a place where it should have a thriving horror scene, but doesn't. One of the main reasons why it doesn't is because it doesn't have a yearly horror convention. The state has a history of horror, like H.P. Lovecraft, who was born and died here. The state is also the location of one of the famous haunted houses that was featured in the popular James Wan film The Conjuring. It would be nice if someone like a Mad Monster Party or Days of the Dead, or yes, even Monster Mania, expands to this nice state of mind. It can be also a totally new convention by someone I never heard of before that puts its focus into the horror genre and the fans, unlike X HorrorCon that I haven't been to in a couple of years because there hasn't been one after they've promised on their official website. In short, a horror convention in Rhode Island would be fun for us people here in the Ocean State, as it gives us a chance to hang out with our favorite icons of horror, bring in some of the tourists, and also makes me not have to travel and pay hotel expenses that goes with going to a horror con. Sincerely, Anthony T. P.S. Please bring or start a horror convention here. Even if it's only for one day, we really need a horror convention here in Rhode Island. Seriously, as it just feels wrong not to have a horror convention here in Rhode Island with its horror history. You can find Anthony T's Horror Show on social media on these platforms. Facebook at facebook.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. Twitter at www.twitter.com/AnthonyT's Horror. On Instagram at www.instagram.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. On YouTube at www.youtube.com/AnthonyTherber. And you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web as well at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. And you can also find Doc Discussions at www.docdiscussions.com. For my film recommendation this episode, I'm staying in the great state of Rhode Island. I know, you heard me rant about wanting a horror con that runs yearly here in Rhode Island. Plus, I figured I'd give you a little taste of the film scene because I could not help but think about, well, there's some very good films that I made in Rhode Island. Then it came to me, quite possibly the most craziest, most insane film ever shot in Rhode Island. I'm talking about Richard Griffin's The Disco Exorcist. Now, before I go into this film, I would not recommend young listeners listening to this film recommendation because this is definitely not a film for young people. So I would recommend you basically turn off this podcast because that is not a film that I would recommend to anybody young due to the themes and nature of the film. So that said, if you have any kids listening, I'd urge you to shut it off. Have a good day. Support indie horror. Because I'm now going to talk about this film in about 3, 2, and 1. This film is batshit insane. I mean it literally. This is probably the most insane film ever shot in the state of Rhode Island. But it's also, I think, one of Richard Griffin's best films, as he's done some really good films such as Splatter Disco, Beyond the Dunwich Horror, Pretty Dead Things, Long Night in a Dead City, to name a few. But The Disco Exorcist is one of my favorite films from director Richard Griffin. One of the things I really loved about this film was the fact that this film is just crazy from the get-go. Literally crazy. It has a 70s theme throughout. I like how Griffin does a very good job capturing that exploitation era in which this film is supposedly set in the 70s. He also does a very good job making sure that this film has some insane action in it. Literally. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of nudity in it. It is just completely insane. And it's still insane 7 years later after the film got released. So, I'm telling you, this film is one crazy film from start to finish. It also helped that it has very good lead performances from Michael Reed, Sarah Nicklin, and Ruth Sullivan. This film is definitely one of those horror films where it's just completely insane from the get-go. It is one of those films that Joe Bob Briggs would probably be proud of, as this film really does a very good job in capturing the exploitation type of genre, while also providing some very good gory death scenes as well. So definitely, I highly recommend, if you're into these like 70s style horror or exploitation films, then I really highly recommend you try and seek out The Disco Exorcist. The film is currently available on Amazon.com, on DVD and Blu-ray as well. I really highly recommend you check this film out. If you like films that are just batshit insane, then most definitely check out The Disco Exorcist, as this film still holds up to this day, as it was first released back in 2012. I highly recommend you check out The Disco Exorcist, and that's why The Disco Exorcist is my film recommendation this episode. There's not much happening over on my YouTube channel at Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube, as I'm kind of waiting on another package to arrive before I start filming the next edition of Anthony T's Horror Collection for the YouTube channel. I also have planned another Viva La Troma this month, and I hope to get a Anthony T's Horror Review or Anthony T's Uncensored episode in this month. It'll probably be one or the other, so expect one of those two as I try to get some sort of schedule on the YouTube channel to how I'm going to roll out each of these episodes. On my next episode of Anthony T's Horror Show, I will be doing a Scares That Cares Weekend 6 preview show. I will have director Patrick Ray on to talk about his two films, It's Hell Getting Old and Rattle. And I'll also talk about the convention with Doc Discussion's host Michael Darwin. So expect that episode most likely next week after this episode's been dropped. With that, it wraps up another episode of Anthony T's Horror Show. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Have a good day and support indie horror.